Chapter 17. Deceptions. Favoring his stiff right leg, Tom bowed with a flourish of his gleeman's cloak that set the colorful patches fluttering. His eyes felt grainy, but he made himself speak lightly.
A good morning to you.
Straightening, he knuckled his long white mustaches grandly. The black and gold-clad servants looked surprised. The two muscular lads straightened from the gold-studded red lacquer chest, with a shattered lid, that they had been about to lift, and the three women stilled their mops in front of them. The hallway was empty along here, except for them, and any excuse to break their labor was good, especially at this hour. They looked as tired as Tom felt, with slumping shoulders and dark circles under their eyes.
A good morning to you, Gleeman, the oldest of the women said.
A bit plump and plain-faced, perhaps. She had a nice smile, weary as she was.
Can we help you?
Tom produced four colored balls from a capacious coat sleeve and began to juggle.
I'm just going about trying to raise spirits. A gleeman must do what he can.
He would have used more than four, but he was fatigued enough to make even that many an exercise in concentration. How long since he had nearly dropped a fifth ball? 2 hours? He stifled a yawn, turned it into a reassuring smile.
A terrible night, and spirits need lifting.
The Lord Dragon saved us,
one of the younger women said. She was pretty and slim, but with a predatory gleam in her dark, shadowed eyes that warned him to temper his smile. Of course, she might be useful if she was both greedy and honest, meaning that she would stay bought once he paid her. It was always good to find another set of hands to place a note, a tongue that would tell him what was heard, and say what he wanted, where he wanted.
Old fool, you have enough hands and ears, so stop thinking of a fine bosom and remember the look in her eye.
The interesting thing was that she sounded as if she meant what she said, and one of the young fellows nodded agreement to her words.
Yes, Tom said. I wonder which High Lord had charge of the docks yesterday.
He nearly fumbled the balls in irritation at himself, bringing it right out like that. He was too tired. He should be in his bed. He should have been there hours ago.
The docks are the defender's responsibility, the eldest woman told him. You'd not know that, of course. The High Lords would not concern themselves.
Tom knew it very well.
Is that so? Well, I am not tyrant, of course.
He changed the balls from a simple circle to a double loop. It looked more difficult than it was, and the girl with the predatory look clapped her hands. Now that he was into it, he might as well go on. After this, though, he would call it a night.
A night? The sun was rising already. Still, it is a shame no one asked why those barges were at the docks, with their hatches down, hiding all those trollocs. Not that I am saying anyone knew the Trollocs were there.
The double loop wobbled, and he quickly went back to a circle.
Light, he was exhausted. You'd think one of the High Lords would have asked, though.
The two young men frowned thoughtfully at one another, and Tom smiled to himself. Another seed planted, just that easily, if clumsily as well. Another rumor started, whatever they knew for a fact about who had charge of the docks. And rumors spread. A rumor like this would not stop short of the city. So it was another small wedge of suspicion driven between commoners and nobles. Who would the commoners turn to except the man they knew the nobles hated? The man who had saved the stone from Shadowspawn. Randall Thor, the Lord Dragon. It was time to leave what he had sown. If the roots had taken hold here, nothing he said now could pull them loose, and he had scattered other seeds this night. But it would not do for anyone to discover he was the one doing the planting.
They fought bravely last night, the High Lords did. Why, I saw...
He trailed off as the women leaped to their mopping, and the men grabbed up the chest and hurried away.
I can find work for Gleeman, too, the Majira's voice said behind him. Idle hands are idle hands.
He turned gracefully, considering his leg, and swept her a deep bow. The top of her head was below his shoulder, but she probably weighed half again what he did.
She had a face like an anvil, not improved by the bandage around her temples, an extra chin and deep-set eyes like chips of black flint.
A good morning to you, gracious lady. A small token of this fresh new day.
He gestured with a flurry of hands and tucked a golden-yellow sunburst blossom, only a little bedraggled for its time up his sleeve, into the gray hair above her bandage. She snatched the flower right out again, of course, and eyed it suspiciously, but that was just as he wanted. He put three limping strides into her moment of hesitation, and when she shouted something after him, he neither listened nor slowed.
Horrible woman, he thought. If we had turned her loose on the Trollocs, she'd have had them all sweeping and mopping.
He yawned behind a hand, jaws creaking. He was too old for this. He was tired, and his knee was a knot of pain. Nights with no sleep, battles, plotting.
Too old.
He should be living quietly on a farm somewhere, with chickens. Farms always had chickens. And sheep. They must not be difficult to look after. Shepherds seemed to loll about and play the pipes all the time. He would play the harp, of course, not pipes. Or his flute. Weather was not good for the harp. And there would be a town nearby, with an inn, where he could amaze the patrons in the common room. He flourished his cloak as he passed two servants. The only point in wearing it in this heat was to let people know he was a gleeman. They perked up at the sight of him, of course, hoping he might pause to entertain for a moment. Most gratifying. Yes, a farm had its virtues. A quiet place. No people to bother him. As long as there was a town close by. Pushing open the door to his room, he stopped in his tracks. Moraine straightened as if she had a perfect right to be going through the papers scattered on his table, and calmly arranged her skirts as she sat on the stool. Now there was a beautiful woman, with every grace a man could want, including laughing at his quips.
Fool, old fool, she's Aes Sedai and you're too tired to think straight.
A good morning to you, Moraine Sedai, he said, hanging his cloak on a peg.
He avoided looking at his writing case, still sitting under the table where he had left it. No point in letting her know was important. Probably no point in checking after she went, for that matter. She could have channeled the lock open and closed again, and he would never be able to tell. Weary as he was, he could not even remember whether he had left anything incriminating in the case. Or anywhere else, for that matter. Everything he could see in the room was right where it belonged. He did not think he could have been foolish enough to leave anything out. Doors in the servants' quarters had no locks or latches.
I would offer you a refreshing drink, but I fear I have nothing but water.
I am not thirsty, she said in a pleasant, melodious voice. She leaned forward, and the room was small enough for her to place a hand on his right knee. A chill tingle rippled through him. I wish a good healer had been near when this happened. It is too late now, I regret.
A dozen healers would not have been enough, he told her. A half-man did it.
I know. What else does she know, he wondered. Turning to pull his lone chair out from behind the table, he bit back an oath. He felt as if he had had a good night's sleep, and the pain was gone from his knee. His limp remained, but the joint was more limber than it had been since he was injured.
The woman didn't even ask if I wanted it. Burn me, what is she after?
He refused to flex the leg. If she would not ask, he would not acknowledge her gift.
An interesting day, yesterday, she said as he sat down.
I'd not call Trollocs and Halfmen interesting, he said dryly.
I did not mean them. Earlier, the High Lord Carlion dead in a hunting accident. His good friend Tadosian apparently mistook him for a boar, or perhaps a deer.
I hadn't heard.
He kept his voice calm. Even if she had found the note, she could not have traced it to him. Carlion himself would have thought it by his own hand. He did not think she could have, but he reminded himself again that she was Aes Sedai. As if he needed any reminding, with that smooth, pretty face across from him, those serene, dark eyes watching him full of all his secrets.
The servants' quarters are full of gossip, but I seldom listen.
Do you not?
She murmured mildly.
Then you will not have heard that Todosian fell ill not an hour after returning to the stone, directly after his wife gave him a goblet of wine to wash away the dust of the hunt. It is said he wept when he learned that she means to tend him herself and feed him with her own hands. No doubt, tears of joy at her love. I hear she has vowed not to leave his side until he can rise again, or until he dies.
She knew. How, he could not say, but she knew.
But why was she revealing it to him?
A tragedy, he said, matching her bland tone. Rand will need all the loyal High Lords he can find, I suppose.
Carleon and Todosian were hardly loyal, even to each other, it seems. They led the faction that want to kill Rand, and tried to forget he ever lived.
Do you say so? I pay little attention to such things. The works of the mighty are not for a simple gleeman.
Her smile was just short of laughter, but she spoke as if reading from a page.
Tomdril Merlin, called the Grey Fox once by some who knew him, or knew of him, court-barred at the royal palace of Andor in Camelon, Morgaze's lover for a time, after Tarangale died. Fortunate for Morgaze, Tarangale's death. I do not suppose she ever learned he meant her to die and himself to be Andor's first king. But we were speaking of Tom Marilyn, a man who, it was said, could play the game of houses in his sleep. It is a shame that such a man calls himself a simple gleeman, but such arrogance to keep the same name.
Tom masked his shock with an effort. How much did she know? Too much if she knew not another word. But she was not the only one with knowledge.
Speaking of names, he said levelly, it is remarkable how much can be puzzled out from a name.
Moraine Domodred, the Lady Moraine of House Domodred in Cairhien, Tarangale's youngest half-sister,
King Laemon's niece,
and Aes Sedai, let us not forget.
An Aes Sedai aiding the dragon reborn since before she could have known that he was more than just another poor fool who could channel. An Aes Sedai with connections high in the White Tower, I would say, else she'd not risk what she has. Someone in the hall of the tower? More than one, I'd say. It would have to be. News of that would shake the world. But why should there be trouble? Perhaps it's best to leave an old gleeman tucked away in his hole in the servants' quarters. Just an old gleeman playing his harp and telling his tales. Tales that harm no one.
If he had managed to stagger her even a fraction, she did not show it.
Speculation without facts is always dangerous, she said calmly. I do not use my house name by choice. House Domodred has a deservedly unpleasant reputation before Laemon cut down Avendor Aldera and lost the throne and his life for it. Since the Aiel War, it has grown worse, also deservedly.
Would nothing shake the woman?
What do you want of me? He demanded irritably.
She did not as much as blink.
Elaine and Nynaeve take ship for Tanchico today. A dangerous city, Tanchico. Your knowledge and skills might keep them alive.
So that was it.
She wanted to separate him from Rand, leave the boy naked to her manipulations.
As you say, Tanchico is dangerous now, but then it always was. I wish the young women well, yet I've no wish to stick my head into a viper's nest. I am too old for that sort of thing. I have been thinking of taking up farming, a quiet life, safe.
A quiet life would kill you, I think.
Sounding distinctly amused, she busied herself rearranging the folds of her skirt with small, slender hands. He had the impression she was hiding a smile.
Tanchico will not, however. I guarantee that, and by the first oath, you know it for truth.
He frowned at her despite his best efforts to keep his face straight. She had said it, and she could not lie. Yet how could she know? He was sure she could not foretell. He was certain he had heard her disavow the talent. But she had said it.
Burn the woman. Why should I go to Tanchico?
She could do without titles. To protect Elaine, Morghese's daughter?
I've not seen Morghese in 15 years. Elaine was an infant when I left Camelon.
She hesitated, but when she spoke, her voice was unrelentingly firm.
And your reason for leaving Andor? A nephew named Owen, I believe. One of those poor fools you spoke of who can channel. The Red Sisters were supposed to bring him to Tar Valon, as any such man is. But instead they gentled him on the spot and abandoned him to the mercies of his neighbors.
Tom knocked his chair over standing up, then had to hold on to the table because his knees were shaking. Owen had not lived long after being gentled, driven from his home by supposed friends who could not bear to let even a man who could no longer channel live among them. Nothing Tom did could stop Owen not wanting to live, or stop his young wife from following him to the grave inside the month.
Why?
He cleared his throat roughly, tried to make his voice less husky.
Why are you telling me this?
There was sympathy on Moraine's face, and could it be regret? Surely not. Not from an Aes Sedai. The sympathy had to be false as well.
I would not have done, had you been willing to go simply to help Elaine and Nynaeve.
Why, burn you, why?
If you go with Elaine and Nynaeve, I will tell you the names of those Red Sisters when I see you next, as well as the name of the one who gave them their orders. They did not act on their own. And I will see you again. You will survive Taraban.
He drew an uneven breath.
What good will their names do me? He asked in a flat voice. Aes Sedai names, wrapped in all the power of the White Tower.
A skilled and dangerous player of the House of Games might find a use for them, she replied quietly. They should not have done what they did. They should not have been excused for it.
Will you leave me, please?
I will teach you that not all Aes Sedai are like those Reds, Tom. You must learn that.
Please.
He stood leaning on the table until she was gone, unwilling to let her see him sink awkwardly to his knees, see the tears trickling down his weathered face.
Oh, light, Owen.
He had buried it all as deeply as he could.
I couldn't get there in time. I was too busy. Too busy with the bloody game of houses.
He scrubbed at his face testily. Moraine could play the game with the best, wrenching him around this way, tugging every string he had thought perfectly hidden. Owen, Elaine, Morghese's daughter. Only fondness remained for Morghese, perhaps a little more than that, but it was hard to walk away from a child you had bounced on your knee.
That girl in Tanchico, that city would eat her alive even without a war. It must be a pit of rabid wolves now. And Moraine will give me the names.
All he had to do was leave Rand in Aes Sedai hands, just as he had left Owen. She had him like a snake in a cleft stick, damned however he writhed.
Burn the woman.
Looping the embroidery basket's handle over her arm, Min gathered her skirts with her other hand and strolled out of the dining hall after breakfast in a gliding pace, her back straight. She could have balanced a full goblet of wine on her head without spilling a drop. Partly that was because she could not take a proper stride in her dress, all pale blue silk, with a snug bodice and sleeves, and a full skirt that would drag its embroidered hem on the ground if she did not hold it up. It was also partly because she was sure she could feel Laris's eyes on her. A glance back proved her right. The mistress of the kitchens, a wine cask on legs, was beaming after her approvingly from the dining hall doorway. Who would have thought the woman had been a beauty in her youth, or would have a place in her heart for pretty, flirtatious girls? Lively, she called them. Who would have suspected she would decide to take Elmindrida under her stout wing? It was hardly a comfortable position. Laris kept a protective eye on Min, an eye that seemed to find her anywhere in the tower grounds. Min smiled back and patted her hair, now a round black cap of curls. Burn the woman. Doesn't she have something to cook, or some scullion to yell at? Laris waved to her, and she waved in return. She could not afford to offend someone who watched her so closely, not when she had no idea how many mistakes she might be making. Laris knew every trick of lively women, and expected to teach Min any she did not already know. One real mistake, Min reflected as she took a seat on a marble bench beneath a tall willow, had been the embroidery. Not from Laris's point of view, but her own. Pulling her embroidery hoop from the basket, she ruefully examined yesterday's work, a number of lopsided yellow oxeyes, and something she had meant to be a pale yellow rosebud, though no one would know unless she told them. With a sigh, she set to picking the stitches out. Liana was right, she supposed. A woman could sit for hours with an embroidery hoop, watching everyone and everything, and nobody thought it strange. It would have helped, though, if she had any skill at all. At least it was a perfect morning for being out of doors. A golden sun had just cleared the horizon in a sky where the few fluffy white clouds seemed arrayed to emphasize the perfection. A light breeze caught the scent of roses and ruffled tall kalma bushes with their big red or white blossoms. Soon enough, the gravel-covered paths near the tree would be full of people on one errand or another, everyone from Aes Sedai to stablemen. A perfect morning, and a perfect place from which to watch unobserved. Perhaps today she would have a useful viewing. Elmindrida? Min jumped and stuck her pricked finger in her mouth. Twisting round on the bench, she prepared to assail Gawain for sneaking up on her, but the words froze in her throat. Galad was with him. Taller than Gawain, with long legs, he moved with a dancer's grace and a lean, sinewy strength. His hands were long, too, elegant yet strong, and his face. He was, quite simply, the most beautiful man she had ever seen. "Stop sucking your finger," Gawain said with a grin. "We know you are a pretty little girl. You do not need to prove it to us." Blushing, she hastily pulled her hand down and barely restrained herself from a furious glare that would not have been at all in keeping with Elmindrida. He had needed no threats or commands from the Ammerlin to keep her secret, only her asking, but he did take any opportunity to tease that presented itself. "It is not right to mock, Gawain," Galad said. He did not mean to offend Mistress Elmindrida. "Your pardon, but can it be we have met before? When you frowned at Gawain so fiercely just then, I almost thought I knew you." Min dropped her eyes demurely. "Oh, I could never forget meeting you, my lord Galad," she said in her best foolish girl voice. The simpering tone and anger at her own slip sent a tide of heat to her hairline, improving her disguise. She did not look anything like herself, and the dress and the hair were only a part of it. Liana had acquired creams and powders and an incredible assortment of mysterious scented things in the city, and drilled her until she could have used them in her sleep. She had cheekbones now, and more color in her lips than nature had put there. A dark cream lining her eyelids and a fine powder that emphasized her lashes made her eyes seem larger. Not at all like herself. Some of the novices had told her admiringly how beautiful she was, and even a few Aes Sedai had called her a very pretty child. She hated it. The dress was quite pretty, she admitted, but she hated the rest of it. Yet there was no point in donning a disguise if she did not keep it up. "I am sure you would remember," Gawain said dryly. "I did not mean to interrupt you at your embroidery. Swallows, are they? Yellow swallows?" Min thrust the hoop back into the basket. "But I wanted to ask you to comment on this." He pushed a small leather-bound book, old and tattered, into her hands, and suddenly his voice was serious. "Tell my brother this is nonsense. Perhaps he will listen to you." She examined the book. "The Way of the Light" by Lothair Mantellar. Opening it, she read at random, "Therefore abjure all pleasure, for goodness is a pure abstract, a perfect crystalline ideal which is obscured by base emotion. Pamper not the flesh. Flesh is weak, but spirit is strong. Flesh is useless where spirit is strong. Right thought is drowned in sensation, and right action hindered by passions. Take all joy from rightness, and rightness only." It seemed to be dry nonsense. Min smiled at Gawain and even managed a titter. "So many words. I fear I know little of books, my Lord Gawain. I always mean to read one. I do," she sighed. "But there is so little time. Why, just fixing my hair properly takes hours. Do you think it is pretty?" The outraged startlement on his face nearly made her laugh, but she changed it to a giggle. It was a pleasure to turn the tables on him for a change. She would have to see if she could do it more often. There were possibilities in this disguise she had not considered. This stay in the tower had turned out to be all boredom and irritation. She deserved some amusement. "Lothair Mantellar," Gawain said in a tight voice, "founded the White Cloaks. The White Cloaks!" "He was a great man," Galad said firmly. "A philosopher of noble ideals. If the Children of the Light have sometimes been excessive since his day, it does not change that."
"Oh, my. White Cloaks," Min said breathlessly, and added a little shudder. "They are such rough men, I hear. I cannot imagine a White Cloak dancing. Do you think there is any chance of a dance here? Aes Sedai do not seem to care for dancing either, and I do so love to dance." The frustration in Gawain's eyes was delightful.
"I do not think so," Galad said, taking the book from her. "Aes Sedai are too busy with their own affairs. If I hear of a suitable dance in the city, I will escort you if you wish it. You need have no fear of being annoyed by those two louts." He smiled at her, unconscious of what he was doing, and she suddenly found herself breathless in truth. Men should not be allowed smiles like that. It actually took her a moment to remember what two louts he was talking about. The two men who had supposedly asked for Almindrida's hand in marriage, nearly fighting each other because she could not make up her mind, pressing her to the point of seeking sanctuary in the tower because she could not stop encouraging them both. Just the entire excuse for her being there. "It's this dress," she told herself. "I could think straight if I had on my proper clothes." "I've noticed the Ammerlin speaks to you every day," Gawain said suddenly. "Has she mentioned our sister Elaine, or Egwene Alvere? Has she said anything of where they are?" Min wished she could black his eye. He did not know why she was pretending to be someone else, of course, but he had agreed to help her be accepted as Almindrida, and now he was linking her to women too many in the tower knew were friends of Min.
"Oh, the Ammerlin Seat is such a wonderful woman," she said sweetly, baring her teeth in a smile. "She always asks how I am passing the time and compliments my dress. I suppose she hopes I'll make a decision soon between Darvan and Gomal, but I just cannot."
She widened her eyes, hoping it made her look helpless and confused.
"They're both so sweet. Who did you say? Your sister, my Lord Gawain? The daughter heir herself? I do not think I've ever heard the Ammerlin Seat mention her. What was the other name?"
She could hear Gawain grinding his teeth. "We should not bother Mistress Almindrida with that," Galad said. "It is our problem, Gawain. It is up to us to find the lie and deal with it." She barely heard him, because suddenly she was staring at a big man with long dark hair curling around slumped shoulders, wandering aimlessly down one of the graveled paths through the trees,
under the watchful eyes of an accepted. She had seen Loghain before, a sad-faced, once-hearty man, always with an accepted for companion. The woman was meant to keep him from killing himself as much as to prevent his escape. Despite his size, he truly did not seem up to anything of the latter sort. But she had never before seen a flaring halo around his head, radiant in gold and blue. It was only there for a moment, but that was enough. Loghain had proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn, had been captured and gentled. Whatever glory he might have had as a false dragon was far behind him now. All that remained for him was the despair of the gentled, like a man who had been robbed of sight and hearing and taste, wanting to die, waiting for the death that inevitably came to such men in a few years. He glanced at her, perhaps not seeing her. His eyes looked hopelessly inward. So why had he worn a halo that shouted of glory and power to come? This was something she had to tell the Ammerlin. "Poor fellow," Gawain muttered. "I cannot help pitying him. Light, it would be a mercy to let him end it. Why do they make him keep on living?" "He deserves no pity," Galad pronounced. "Have you forgotten what he was, what he did? How many thousands died before he was taken? How many towns were burned? Let him live on as a warning to others." Gawain nodded, but reluctantly. "Yet men followed him. Some of those towns were burned after they declared for him." "I have to go," Min said, getting to her feet, and Galad was instantly all solicitude. "Forgive us, Mistress Elmindrida. We did not mean to frighten you. Loghain cannot harm you. I give you my assurance."
Yes, he's made me feel faint. Do excuse me. I really must go lie down."
Gawain looked extremely skeptical, but he scooped up her basket before she could touch it. "Let me see you part of the way at least," he said, his voice oozing false concern. "This basket must be too heavy for you, dizzy as you are. I'd not want you to swoon." She wanted to snatch the basket and hit him with it, but that was not how Elmindrida would react.
"Oh, thank you, my lord Gawain. You are so kind, so kind. No, no, my lord Galad, do not let me encumber both of you. Do sit down here and read your book. Do say you will. I just could not bear it otherwise."
She even fluttered her eyelashes. Somehow she managed to ensconce Galad on the marble bench and get away, though with Gawain right beside her. Her skirts were an irritant. She wanted to pull them up to her knees and run, but Elmindrida would never run, and never expose so much of her legs except when dancing. Laris had lectured her severely on that very point. One time running, and she would nearly destroy the image of Elmindrida completely. And Gawain. "Give me that basket, you muscle-brained cretin," she snarled as soon as they were out of Galad's sight, and pulled it away from him before he could comply. "What do you mean by asking me about Elaine and Egwene in front of him? Elmindrida never met them. Elmindrida does not care about them. Elmindrida does not want to be mentioned in the same sentence with them. Can't you understand that?" "No," he said. "Not since you won't explain. But I am sorry." There was hardly enough repentance in his voice to suit her. "It is just that I am worried. Where are they? This news coming upriver about a false dragon in Tyr makes me no easier in my mind. They are out there, somewhere, the light knows where, and I keep asking myself, what if they are in the middle of the sort of bonfire Loghain made out of Gildon?"
"What if he isn't a false dragon?" she asked cautiously.
"You mean because the stories in the streets say he's taken the Stone of Tyr? Rumor has a way of magnifying events. I will believe that when I see it, and in any case it will take more to convince me. Even the stone could fall. Light, I don't really believe Elaine and Egwene are in Tyr, but the not knowing eats at my belly like acid. If she is hurt..."
Min did not know which she he meant, and suspected he did not either. In spite of his teasing, her heart went out to him, but there was nothing she could do. "If you could only do as I say and..."
"I know. Trust the Ammerlin. Trust!" He exhaled a long breath. "Do you know Galad has been drinking in the taverns with white cloaks?
Anyone can cross the bridges if they come in peace, even children of the bloody light. Galad? She said incredulously. In taverns? Drinking? No more than a cup or two, I'm sure. He would not unbend more than that, not for his own name day. Gawain frowned as if unsure whether that might be a criticism of Galad. The point is that he is talking with white cloaks, and now this book. According to the inscription, Eamon Valda himself gave it to him. In the hope you will find the way. Valda, Min. The man commanding the white cloaks on the other side of the bridges, not knowing is eating Galad up too, listening to white cloaks. If anything happens to our sister, or to Egwene, he shook his head. Do you know where they are, Min? Would you tell me if you did? Why are you hiding? Because I drove two men mad with my beauty and cannot make up my mind, she told him acidly. He gave a bitter half-laugh, then masked it with a grin. Well, that at least I can believe. He chuckled and stroked under her chin with a finger. You are a very pretty girl, Elmendrida. A pretty, clever little girl. She doubled a fist and tried to punch him in the eye, but he danced back, and she stumbled over her skirts and nearly fell. You bloody ox of a thimble-brained man, she growled. Such grace of movement, Elmendrida, he laughed. Such a dulcet voice, as a nightingale or a cooing dove of the evening. What man would not grow starry-eyed at the sight of Elmendrida? The mirth slid away, and he faced her soberly. If you learn anything, please tell me. Please, I will beg on my knees, Min. I will tell you, she said, if I can. If it's safe for them. Light, but I hate this place. Why can't I just go back to Rand? She left Gawain there and entered the tower proper by herself, keeping an eye out for Aes Sedai or Accepted, who might question why she was above the ground floor and where she was going. The news of Loghain was too important to wait until the Amyrlin encountered her, seemingly by accident, sometime in the late afternoon as usual. At least, that was what she told herself. Impatience threatened to pop out through her skin. She only saw a few Aes Sedai, turning a corner ahead of her or entering a room in the distance, which was all to the good. No one simply dropped in on the Amyrlin seat. The handful of servants she passed, all bustling about their work, did not question her, of course, or even look at her twice, except to drop quick curtsies, almost without pausing. Pushing open the door to the Amyrlin study, she had a simpering tale ready in case anyone was with Lyanna, but the antechamber was empty. She hurried to the inner door and put her head in. The Amyrlin and the keeper were seated on either side of Swan's table, which was littered with small strips of thin paper. Their heads swiveled toward her sharply, a stare like four nails. "What are you doing here?" the Amyrlin snapped. "You are supposed to be a silly girl claiming sanctuary, not a friend of my childhood. There is to be no contact between us except the most casual, in passing. If necessary, I'll name Laris to watch over you like a nurse over a child. She would enjoy that, I think, but I doubt you would." Min shivered at the thought. Suddenly, Loghain did not seem so urgent. It was hardly likely he could achieve any glory in the next few days. He was not really why she had come, though, only an excuse, and she would not turn back now. Closing the door behind her, she stammered out what she had seen and what it meant. She still felt uncomfortable doing so in front of Lyanna. Swan shook her head wearily. Another thing to worry about. Starvation in Cairhien. A sister missing in Tarabon. Trolloc raids increasing in the borderlands again. This fool who calls himself the Prophet stirring up riots in Gil'dan. He's apparently preaching that the dragon has been reborn as a Shinaran lord, she said incredulously. Even the small things are bad. The war in Arad-Doman has stopped trade from Saldaea, and the pinch is making unrest in Maradon. Tenobia may even be forced off the throne by it. The only good news I have heard is that the Blight has retreated for some reason. 2 miles or more of green beyond the border stones, without a hint of corruption or pestilence, all the way from Saldaea to Shinar. The first time in memory it has done that. But I suppose good news has to be balanced by bad.
When a boat has one leak, it is sure to have others. I only wish it was a balance. Liana, have the watch on Loghain increased. I can't see what trouble he could cause now, but I do not want to find out. She turned those piercing blue eyes on Min. Why did you come flapping up here with this like a startled gull? Loghain could have waited. The man is hardly likely to find power and glory before sunset. The near echo of her own thoughts made Min shift uncomfortably. I know, she said. Liana's eyebrows rose warningly, and she added a hasty, Mother. The keeper nodded approvingly. That does not tell me why, child, Swan said. Min steeled herself. Mother, nothing I've viewed since the first day has been very important. I certainly have not seen anything that points to the Black Adja. That name still gave her a chill. I've told you everything I know about whatever disaster you Aes Sedai are going to face, and the rest of it is just useless. She had to stop and swallow with that penetrating gaze on her. Mother, there is no reason I should not go. There's reason I should. Perhaps Rand could make real use of what I can do. If he has taken the stone, Mother, he may need me. At least I need him, burn me for a fool. The keeper shuddered openly at the mention of Rand's name. Swan, on the other hand, snorted loudly. Your viewings have been very useful. It's important to know about Loghain. You found the groom who was stealing before suspicion could land on anyone else, and that fire-haired novice who was going to get herself with child. Shiriam cut that short. The girl won't even think of men until she's finished her training, but we'd not have known until it was too late without you. No, you cannot go. Sooner or later your viewings will draw me a chart to the Black Adja, and until they do, they still more than pay their passage. Min sighed, and not only because the Amarlin meant to hold on to her. The last time she had seen that red-headed novice, the girl had been sneaking off to a wooded part of the grounds with a muscular guard. They would be married, maybe before the end of summer. Min had known that as soon as she saw them together, though the tower never let a novice leave until the tower was ready, even one who could not go any further in her training. There was a farm in that pair's future, and a swarm of children, but it was pointless to tell the Amarlin that. Could you at least let Gawain and Galadh know that Egwene and their sister are all right, Mother? Asking irked her, and her tone of voice did too. A child denied a slice of cake, begging for a cookie instead. At least tell them something besides that ridiculous tale about doing penance on a farm. I have told you that is none of your concern. Do not make me tell you again. They don't believe it any more than I do, Min got out, before the Amarlin's dry smile quieted her. It was not an amused smile. So you suggest I change where they are supposed to be, after letting everyone think them on a farm? Do you suppose that might raise a few eyebrows? Everyone but those boys accepts it, and you. Well, Coolin Gaiden will just have to work them that much harder. Sore muscles and enough sweat will take most men's minds off other troubles. Women's minds, too. You ask any more questions, and I'll see what a few days scrubbing pots will do for you. Better to lose your services for 2 or 3 days than have you poking your nose where it does not belong. You don't even know if they are in trouble, do you? Or Moiraine. It was not Moiraine she meant. Girl, Liana said warningly, but Min was not to be stopped now. Why haven't we heard? Rumors reached here 2 days ago. 2 days. Why doesn't one of those slips on your desk contain a message from her? Doesn't she have pigeons? I thought you Aes Sedai had people with messenger pigeons everywhere. If there isn't one in Tyr, there should be. A man on horseback could have reached Tar Valon before now. Why? The flat crack of Swan's palm on the table cut her off. You obey remarkably well, she said wryly. Child, until we hear something to the contrary, assume the young man is well. Pray that he is. Liana shivered again. There's a saying in the Mauler, child, the Amarlin went on. Do not trouble trouble till trouble troubles you. Mark it well, child. There was a timid knock at the door.
The Armorlin and the Keeper exchanged glances, then two sets of eyes shifted to Min. Her presence was a problem. There was certainly nowhere to hide. Even the balcony was clearly visible from the room in its entirety. "A reason for you to be here," Swan muttered. "That doesn't make you any more than the fool girl you're supposed to be. Liana, stand ready at the door." She and the Keeper were on their feet together, Swan coming around the table while Liana moved to the door. "Take Liana's seat, girl. Move your feet. Child, move your feet. Now look sulky. Not angry, sulky. Stick your lower lip out and stare at the floor. I may make you wear ribbons in your hair. Huge red bows. That's it. Liana." The Armorlin put her fists on her hips and raised her voice. "And if you ever walk in on me unannounced again, child, I will." Liana pulled the door open to reveal a dark novice who flinched at Swan's continuing tirade, then dropped a deep curtsy.
"Messages for the Armorlin, Aes Sedai," the girl squeaked. "Two pigeons arrived at the loft."
She was one of those who had told Min she was beautiful, and she tried to stare past the Keeper with wide eyes.
"This does not concern you, child," Liana said briskly, taking the tiny cylinders of bone out of the girl's hand. "Back to the loft with you."
Before the novice finished rising, Liana shut the door, then leaned against it with a sigh.
"I have jumped at every unexpected sound since you told me."
Straightening, she came back to the table.
"Two more messages, mother. Shall I?"
"Yes, open them," the Armorlin said. "No doubt more gaze has decided to invade Kyrian after all, or Trollocs have overrun the borderlands. It would be of a piece with everything else." Min kept her seat. Swan had sounded all too realistic with some of those threats. Liana examined the red wax seal on the end of one of the small cylinders, no larger than her own finger joint, then broke it open with a thumbnail when she was satisfied it had not been tampered with. The rolled paper inside she extracted with a slim ivory pick.
"Nearly as bad as Trolloc's, mother," she said almost as soon as she began reading. "Mazrim Time has escaped."
"Light!" Swan barked. "How?"
"This only says he was taken away by stealth in the night, mother. Two sisters are dead.
The light illumined their souls. But we've little time to mourn the dead while the likes of Time are alive and ungentled. Where, Liana?"
"Denhuir, mother. A village east of the Black Hills on the Maradon Road above the headwaters of the Anteo and the Luan."
"It had to be some of his followers. Fools. Why won't they know when they are beaten?"
"Choose out a dozen reliable sisters, Liana." The Armorlin grimaced.
"Reliable," she muttered. "If I knew who was more reliable than a silver pike, I'd not have the problems I do. Do the best you can, Liana. A dozen sisters. And 500 of the guards. No, a full 1,000.
"Mother," the Keeper said worriedly, "the White Cloaks
would not try to cross the bridges if I left them unwatched entirely. They would be afraid of a trap. There is no telling what is going on up there, Liana. I want whoever I send to be ready for anything. And Liana, Mazrim Time is to be gentled as soon as he is taken again."
Liana's eyes opened wide with shock.
"The law?" "I know the law as well as you, but I will not risk having him freed again ungentled. I'll not risk another Gwer Amalasin, not on top of everything else."
"Yes, mother,"
Liana said faintly. The Armorlin picked up the second bone cylinder and snapped it in two with a sharp crack to get the message out.
"Good news at last," she breathed, a smile blooming on her face.
"Good news. The sling has been used. The shepherd holds the sword."
"Rand?"
Min asked, and Swan nodded.
"Of course, girl. The stone has fallen. Randall Thor, the shepherd, has Kalendor. Now I can move. Liana, I want the Hall of the Tower convened this afternoon. No, this morning."
"I don't understand," Min said. "You knew the rumors were about Rand. Why are you calling the hall now? What can you do that you could not before?"
Swan laughed like a girl.
"What I can do now is tell them right out that I have received word from an Aes Sedai that the Stone of Tyr has fallen and a man has drawn Kalendor. Prophecy fulfilled. Enough of it for my purpose, at least. The dragon is reborn.
They'll flinch, they'll argue, but none can oppose my pronouncement that the tower must guide this man. At last I can involve myself with him openly. Openly for the most part. Are we doing the right thing, Mother? Lyanna said abruptly. I know, if he has Kalendor, he must be the dragon reborn. But he can channel, Mother. A man who can channel. I only saw him once, but even then there was something strange about him. Something more than being Ta'veren. Mother, is he so very different from time when it comes down to it? The difference is that he is the dragon reborn, daughter, the Ammerlin said quietly. Time is a wolf, and maybe rabid. Randall Thor is the wolfhound we will use to defeat the shadow. Keep his name to yourself, Lyanna. Best not to reveal too much too soon. As you say, Mother, the keeper said, but she still sounded uneasy. Off with you now. I want the hall assembled in an hour. Swan thoughtfully watched the taller woman go. There may be more resistance than I would wish, she said when the door clicked shut. Min looked at her sharply. You don't mean, oh, nothing serious, child. Not as long as they don't know how long I have been involved with the Al-Thor boy. She looked at the slip of paper again, then dropped it onto the table. I could wish Moraine had told me more. Why didn't she say more? And why have we not heard from her before this? More questions with you. That one you must ask Moraine. She has always gone her own way. Ask Moraine, child. Sarah Covenry worked the hoe in a desultory fashion, frowning at the tiny sprouts of threadleaf and hen's foot poking up in the rows of cabbages and beets. It was not that Mistress Elward was a harsh taskmistress. She was no more stern than Sarah's mother, and certainly easier than Shiriam. But Sarah had not gone to the White Tower to end up back on a farm hoeing vegetables with the sun barely up. Her white novice dresses were packed away. She wore brown wool her mother might have sewn, the skirt tied up to her knees to keep it out of the dirt. It was all so unfair. She had not done anything. Wriggling her bare toes in the turned soil, she glared at a stubborn hen's foot and channeled, meaning to burn it out of the ground. Sparks flashed around the leafy sprout, and it wilted. Hurriedly, she sliced the thing out of the dirt and her mind. If there was any fairness in the world, Lord Galad would come to the farm while out hunting. Leaning on the hoe, she lost herself in a daydream of healing Galad's injuries, received in a fall from his horse. Not his fault, of course. He was a wonderful horseman, and him lifting her up in front of him on his saddle, declaring he would be her warder. She would be green, Aja, of course, and Sarah Covenry? Sarah jumped at the sharp voice, but it was not Mistress Elwood. She curtsied as best she could with her skirts gathered up. The day's greeting, Aes Sedai. Have you come to take me back to the tower? The Aes Sedai moved closer, not caring that her skirts dragged through the dirt of the vegetable patch. Despite the summer warmth of the morning, she wore a cloak, the hood pulled up to shadow her face. Just before you left the tower, you took a woman to the Ammerlin seat. A woman calling herself Elmindrida. Yes, Aes Sedai? Sarah said, a slight question in her voice. She did not like the way the Aes Sedai had said that, as if she had left the tower for good. Tell me everything that you heard or saw, girl, from the moment you took the woman in charge. Everything. But I heard nothing, Aes Sedai. The keeper sent me away as soon as... Pain racked her, digging her toes into the dirt, arching her back. The spasm lasted only moments, but it seemed eternal. Struggling for breath, she realized her cheek was pressed to the ground, and her still trembling fingers dug into the soil. She did not remember falling. She could see Mistress Elward's laundry basket lying on its side near the stone farmhouse, damp linens spilled out in a heap. Dazed, she thought that that was odd. Moira Elward would never leave her washing lying like that. Everything, girl, the Aes Sedai said coldly. She was standing over Sarah now, making no move to help her. She had hurt her. It was not supposed to be that way. Every person this Elmindrida spoke to, every word she said, every nuance and expression.
"She spoke to Lord Gawain, Aes Sedai," Sara sobbed into the earth. "That is all I know, Aes Sedai, all."
She began to weep in earnest, sure that was not enough to satisfy this woman. She was right. She did not stop screaming for a long time, and when the Aes Sedai left, there was not a sound around the farmhouse except for the chickens, not even breathing.